of Nevada v. Lauren Meyer, case number 86371. It's a time set for the oral argument. We have the state here, Mr. Naughton.
Good morning, Your Honor.
Hey, welcome. And Mr. O'Meara.
Good morning, Your
Honor. Hey, welcome to you also. It's kind of unusual to see a pretrial appeal from the state, but these things happen, and this case brings up some very interesting issues. We thought we needed to flesh them out, and we set this for argument today. So there's various nuances to some of these arguments, and we'll just see how it develops during the oral argument. Mr. Naughton, would you like to reserve any time for a rebuttal argument?
Yes, Your Honor. I would like to reserve 3 minutes, please.
3 minutes. Okay. All right. You may proceed.
May I approach the podium?
Good morning, Your Honors. Counsel, may it please the court. This case represents an abuse of discretion by the district court. And the district court found in dismissing the criminal charges against Ms. Meyer that a single word spoke louder than all of the actions and evidence in this case. In doing so, it ignored the applicable case law, it ignored its own analysis, and it disregarded the substantial weight of the facts. The court started backwards in this case, and it didn't like a comment that one of the investigating officers made. The state certainly doesn't condone that comment, but the court worked backwards from that comment to find bad faith and then materiality as a result.
Did you get a chance to respond to that below about how that happened, the very point you're making right now?
Not necessarily, Your Honor. This was the procedure below somewhat evolved over time. After the preliminary hearing, Ms. Meyer filed a pretrial petition for writ of habeas corpus, raising statute of limitations as the primary argument. And then after conducting a hearing on that, the court really focused on the spoliation of evidence issue and requested supplemental briefing.
Is there any issue set forth in that pretrial writ that is properly before us on appeal, or are we just simply looking at the dismissal of the charges based on spoliation?
I think we're only looking at dismissal of the charges based on spoliation. If you look at the final order disposing entered by the district court in this case, that's really what it was based on. It was only based on the findings that the court made at that final hearing, and those findings were all based upon the bad faith and materiality of the uncollected evidence. In this type of case, the analysis is a two-factor analysis set forth by Daniels, and it has to go in order. The court first has to determine, based upon a demonstration by the defendant, that the uncollected evidence was material, and it's our position that that didn't happen here. Only after finding that the evidence is material, the court then has to make a determination whether that failure was done in negligence, gross negligence, or bad faith. And only upon a showing of bad faith is dismissal an appropriate remedy.
What test did the district court apply, the failure to collect or the failure to preserve?
That's unclear, I think, from the court's analysis, Your Honor. It appeared to discuss both factors, and I think both factors are present in both of those cases. The court did make a finding of materiality and of bad faith, but I'm not sure exactly under its stated analysis whether it applied the test from Daniels or the failure to preserve test from Higgs and that line of cases.
It doesn't really matter, though, does it, whether it's the failure to preserve or the failure to collect, because the key issue is whether it's material. And if I understood your earlier comment, you indicated that materiality needed to be addressed before the bad faith.
That's correct, Your Honor. That's under the Daniels case. However, if the court does apply the failure to preserve line of cases, I believe that is a disjunctive test. Either a showing of bad faith or materiality would be sufficient. It's the state's position that the defendant in this case didn't make a sufficient showing on either prong. And so even if the court applies the failure to preserve line of cases, we still think that the district court abused its discretion here. However, based upon the facts that were demonstrated at the preliminary hearing, the arguments of counsel, we think this is squarely within the Daniels analysis for failure to collect. There was no evidence that Ms. Meyer presented showing that police ever collected or gained control of the uncollected blood evidence inside the Mercedes or the Mercedes itself. This is similar to Steese. In that case, the Nevada Supreme Court found that police who had searched a trailer and a truck belonging to the victim and subsequently released it to family who found pieces of potential evidence inside of it didn't actually control those items of evidence directly, and therefore it fell under Daniels in the failure to collect cases, failure to gather cases, rather than the failure to preserve cases. In this case, Ms. Meyer complains that police failed to collect the uncollected blood evidence from inside the Mercedes, from the passenger side, from the floorboards, and elsewhere in the car, as well as the Mercedes itself for mechanical testing or analysis of the data recorder, the crash data recorder. There's no evidence that was ever actually collected by police. Officer Jones testified at the preliminary hearing that he was unaware of any steps that were taken to preserve the evidence. The evidence shows that it was released back to its registered owner, Mr. Kubro, and the district court even addressed that at one point, saying that was arguably a reasonable step given the fact that Ms. Meyer wasn't the registered owner of this car. And so this is very similar to Steese. The police just simply didn't collect the Mercedes in this case or the uncollected blood evidence inside of it. And regarding materiality, addressing that first prong of the Daniels test, the district court very clearly stated that it didn't think this was material, and it also engaged in speculation, which is allowed under the various cases, including Daniels, Steese, and Randolph. Materiality has to be demonstrated. It can't be presumed. In this case, there is no evidence that Ms. Meyer presented demonstrating the materiality of the uncollected blood evidence or the Mercedes itself. The district court indicated that, the district court said several times, it probably is her blood, right, referring to the uncollected evidence from inside that Mercedes, including on the passenger side that wasn't collected. That's speculation, which you're not allowed to do under the Daniels analysis. And he concluded that that wasn't going to provide exoneration for her. In other words, that wouldn't have changed the result here, and so therefore it wasn't material, even if it did come back as Ms. Meyer's blood.
How can we determine materiality without a trial?
It's an excellent question, Your Honor, and I think perhaps a more in-depth evidentiary hearing or in support of the petition and the supplemental briefing, some evidence from the defense to demonstrate that this could have been material or might have been material. However, that still gets into the realm of speculation. And it is interesting, all of these cases that are cited in Daniels are all trial cases. They're all after the fact. This is pre-trial. This is based upon the evidence adduced at a preliminary hearing where the standard is much lower. And for those reasons, we think that the court abused its discretion in finding that any additional evidence that was uncollected would have changed the result of that preliminary hearing in support of probable cause for these two charges. The court also speculated that even if it wasn't her blood, let's say it was the vehicle owner's blood. So again, speculating, which you're not allowed to do under the Daniels line of cases, and then concluded that it wasn't her car, she would expect the owner's DNA to be inside of it. Again, finding that it wasn't likely to be material, it wasn't likely to change the result in this case.
But because the blood was in the other areas of the car, was not either collected or preserved, aren't we left with speculation at this point?
I think so, Your Honor. And it's the state's position that that's what Ms. Meyer presented to the court, is pure speculation, mere speculation, and that is insufficient to demonstrate materiality under the Daniels test.
But the reason that the speculation exists is because the blood samples or alleged other evidence in the car was neither collected nor preserved.
That's correct. And I think that really touches at one of the issues that the Daniels court looked at and one of the reasons why the court adopted the test set forth in that New Mexico case, WARE, W-A-R-E. In doing so, the Nevada Supreme Court recognized that police aren't required to collect every single possible piece of evidence from a crime scene. Now, that is mitigated or tempered by the duty to collect potentially material evidence, and that's what we're really focusing on in Daniel. And that's where Ms. Meyer, in our opinion, failed to show the materiality of this evidence beyond mere speculation. Evidence of Ms. Meyer's blood elsewhere in that Mercedes wasn't likely to change the outcome of this case. The first witness on scene who saw the crash and responded to that Mercedes saw her bloody inside the car trying to climb out the passenger side because the driver's side door was still closed and the airbags on that side had been deployed. So blood elsewhere, her blood elsewhere in that car wouldn't demonstrate that she wasn't the driver. Officer Jones looked at the passenger side of the Mercedes and didn't see any indication that someone had been on that side during the crash. No indication on the dashboard, no indication on the windshield that somebody had been seated in that car, on that side of the car, excuse me. Even if the blood was somebody else's, it still wouldn't indicate that Ms. Meyer wasn't the driver. In this case, officers collected the single best piece of evidence that they felt would demonstrate who the driver was in response to Ms. Meyer's statement to them that she wasn't the driver, that she wasn't driving this Mercedes at the time. They saw that deployed driver's side airbag. They saw what they believed to be blood on it. and they collected it and submitted it for forensic testing. Now, Ms. Meyer, on appeal, suggests that, well, police only collected the evidence that they thought was most likely to incriminate Ms. Meyer. And I think that single investigative step by Officer Jones and the other police on scene demonstrates that this wasn't a singularly focused investigation based only on incriminating Ms. Meyer. Until that forensic testing was done over a year after the crash, they didn't know whose blood was on that airbag. The fact that it came back and showed that Ms. Meyer was the single source contributor of the blood on that airbag, I think goes along with all of the other weight of the evidence in this case to show that Ms. Meyer was in fact the driver of this case.
Do you think the court's concern in part was the delay in not only bringing the charges, but perhaps in testing the blood that was collected? And the court was concerned about that. And I believe in the initial writ, there was a statute of limitations argument made, which the court did reject. But do you think that played a role in the issue of the court asking for, sua sponte, asking for briefing on spoliation?
I think it may have indicated, well, excuse me, at that second hearing, I think the court indicated that it didn't really think the statute of limitations argument was any good. And that's why it focused in on the spoliation. And I think Judge Walker specifically said that's why I asked for the supplemental briefing, is because I really think that's the heart of the issue. In dismissing the charges against Ms. Meyer, the court really did focus in on that officer's statement. He found it unprofessional, and he went backwards from that and said, I think that's evidence of bad faith, and therefore it's my job to punish the state.
Can you go through the factual sequence of how the investigation proceeded up to that point? So what was known before that statement was ever uttered?
Yes, Your Honor. We have evidence from the preliminary hearing in this case. Officer Jones, Officer LaFrance, and Officer Christensen were all Reno Police Department officers who responded to the crash. They saw that the silver Mercedes was out in the field by itself. They saw Ms. Meyer was the only person in, near, or around that Mercedes. They used an infrared camera or a thermal imager from the Reno Fire Department to search that field based upon Ms. Meyer's statement that she wasn't the driver, to see if there was anybody else who'd been ejected from that car, ran away from that car, or was otherwise around that car. They didn't see anything.
Was this kind of a rural area?
It's in the city of Reno. It's an old golf course. I think the Justice of the Peace even referenced that when asking somebody to estimate how many yards off of the roadway this crash was. So it's a fallow golf course that has been taken over by the airport as sort of a buffer zone in a somewhat rural area within city limits.
So if they're using this device, was it actually intended to find where somebody might reasonably have gone following the accident?
That part I'm not clear on. I think the evidence from the officers was that they believed it would show heat signatures, that it was sort of a reverse image display. And so a heat sensor would show up on the display and anything else would show cold. They also examined the area on foot using their flashlights. They spoke to the witnesses on scene who only saw Ms. Meyer in that area.
Do you know, one more question on that. Do you know how much time elapsed from when the police first arrived until that statement was uttered?
The best evidence that we have is that it was several hours. The testimony adduced at preliminary hearing from Mr. Gebhardt said the crash happened at about 3:40 or 3:45. Officers said they thought they responded about 3:30. The body cam evidence in this case, and I think some of the information presented by the attorneys at that hearing, was that this was hours later while they were waiting for a tow truck to remove the Mercedes from the scene. The timestamp on that video isn't entirely clear. It appears to be in GMT time, and we don't unfortunately have any evidence in the record about whether you subtract 7 or 8 hours to get to local time from there.
I know you want to reserve 3 minutes, and I apologize, but I do have one follow-up question. Did Officer LaFrance actually participate in the investigation, or did he not participate in it directly?
That part is also unclear from the testimony. At preliminary hearing, he indicated that he assisted with some of the search of the scene. I think he said that he also looked into the Mercedes, but Officer Jones very clearly testified that it was his decision along with his sergeant about what evidence to collect, including the deployed driver's side airbag from inside that Mercedes.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
Good morning, Justices. May it please the court, my name is David O'Mara, and I represent the respondent, Lauren Meyer. Very hot bench today, so I'll let you guys ask questions for me, and I'll answer them accordingly. But we're really here because we've got two interests that are colliding together. One is whether a defendant's interest in obtaining a fair trial, and two, the state's interest in effectiveness of law enforcement, revealing the truth in criminal proceedings, and the conviction of criminal defendants if the evidence is beyond a reasonable doubt. And today we're here because those interests are colliding together. This court has been asked to find that by the state to find that the Judge Walker abused his discretion, but by doing that, this court will intrude into the prerogatives of the trial court, and you should not do that today and should affirm Judge Walker. And the reasons for that are many. When we look at due process, this law, the laws in Nevada, recognize three circumstances where the state violates an individual's right to due process. And that is when the state fails to provide evidence to the defense, which is within or potentially within the state's purview. And that's really where this question comes. You know, we have the first circumstance, which is very well known, Brady, where the state collects the evidence. They then withhold the evidence, and that is a violation of due process. The second one is when they collect the evidence, they lose it, they destroy it, they fail to preserve it, and when the defense asks for that information, it's not provided because they've lost it, and that is also a due process violation. And the third circumstance arises when the state fails to collect evidence from the crime scene. Now, failure to collect evidence in some cases, which is this case, is actually the suppression of evidence because the state has law enforcement. The state knew that there was evidence in the vehicle and there was the vehicle that would be relevant and material to the conviction or the defense of the case.
Mr. O'Mara, can you just identify us for us what pieces of evidence you're referring to?
Yeah, so there's multiple blood stains within the car. There's also the vehicle. And those two things are very important, especially when you take into consideration, Your Honor, the testimony of Ms. Meyer, which is she was not the driver. You also have to take into consideration the testimony of the witness that was not identified, who went to the car, who then left the scene. You also have to take into consideration the cops, the police department, saying that they actually did research and they searched around but found no footprints. So when you look at that and you say, why would you not find footprints when you have one unidentified witness going to the scene of the crime, goes to the car, then leaves after making that affirmative act of getting to the car and then going to the other witness that testified later on. That's one person going to the car.
What would that have shown, though? Let's say you're the witness, you go to the car, there's nobody in the car. I mean, what else are you going to do? You're going to leave.
Well, there was someone in the car. There was someone on the side, on the passenger side of the vehicle, which is where the second witness who testified said that they found Ms. Meyer on the passenger side. So if the cops did not secure the area, you have a car that immediately comes up on the scene. They go to the vehicle, and the police department do not do an adequate investigation of what happened what possibly could have happened in the ditch. Did that person leave and take his friend, the driver? There's a lot of problems with the shoddy and inadequate investigation.
So I was just trying to clarify if you were attributing some fault to the police for not identifying this witness.
Well, the problem with it is, Your Honor, is that when they don't do a certain information and they don't delve into the actual facts of what was this witness, what kind of car was it, they don't ask those questions they can't do an adequate investigation. But the real improper investigation is what we have in front of us, right? We have blood stains, okay? And are those material? Well, of course the blood stains are material. The police department took a sample of the blood. Now, do they have to take all the blood stains? No, they don't. I mean, we know that the duty to collect is not that they have to get every single blood stain. But the question is that they came upon a person who said they were not the driver. So they took one piece of evidence with not anything else, nothing on the steering wheel, nothing on the floor side. And one of the officers specifically said only half of Ms. Meyer's face was swollen. That is also an indication that maybe she was not in the driver's seat. The other thing about it is...
Counsel, how do you respond to the state's argument that the police decided to collect the driver's airbag at a point in time before they knew it was her blood? So that could have... I mean, why were they acting in bad faith by only collecting that? It doesn't seem like if they didn't know whose blood it was, how, you know, can you suggest they were trying to frame her?
Well, I think that it's not that they just only collected one thing. It's the mentality and the intent of the officers at the scene, right? You have an individual on body cam, and I know the court has reviewed it, but it wasn't just like this officer was talking about this case. The officer came up, the body cam was talking about him, about another case, and then started talking about, I was trying to be nice. I was trying to get her to admit that she was not.
Okay, but counsel, how do you respond to the state's argument that the officer who made that derogatory statement was not the one who originally made the decisions with respect to evidence gathering?
Because the investigation is not just one officer, it's all of them. So when one officer makes the comment of whatever be, and I can say it, whatever bitch, and in front of the other officers that are involved in the case, and there's no affirmative, wait a second, we shouldn't be using this type of terms. That there's an acquiescence that they are all together thinking the same thing. We don't have to do anything. This woman has said that she was not the driver. We don't believe her. We don't need to do anything more than get one sample to show that that's the case.
Right, but if she said she wasn't the driver, wouldn't it make sense to only get the driver's side airbag? Because if she's telling the truth, then presumably the driver's side airbag would have somebody else's blood on it. And they didn't know it wasn't hers or that, it would be hers at the time they gathered it.
But there was other blood on the driver's side, and they didn't collect any of that blood.
Where? Where was
on the steering wheel, I believe it was, and things of that nature. So, and if you look at Judge Walker, he specifically was like, well, look, you're going to have splatter. You're going to have a lot of things. And it goes into consideration of the totality of the circumstances with the car. We don't have the car. We don't know if the seat was far back. We don't know if the seat was far forward. I mean, those type of things are important for the defense and our material to determine whether or not they have a case in regards to what happens. So
wasn't the investigation already completed at the time Officer LaFrance made his statement?
The question that is, Your Honor, I don't know the answer because not even the state knows who made the actual statement. As they said, they can't confirm it in their recent filing of who made that decision.
I thought it was Officer LaFrance. We don't know who made the actual statement.
It may be not Officer LaFrance. It may be the other ones. But it doesn't matter if they make it after the conclusion. His intent at the time that he was investigating the situation was he was going to discount and not look into anything that Ms. Meyer was saying in regards to what was happening in the case.
Is it your position that the state should have impounded the vehicle?
The state did impound the vehicle. They went and they had it towed. And they certainly had possession. They were the ones that called the tow company. They're the ones that had that ability to do that.
But then they turned it back to the owner of the car. They turned the vehicle back to the owner of the car and, to your knowledge, never did any further testing.
To our knowledge, there was no further testing or notice in regards to my client being able to have that availability.
Wasn't the impounding because they couldn't locate the owner, so they had no choice, they had to impound it?
I don't believe that that's the case, Your Honor, because the owner was called, and I believe the time frames are different. The videos, the cameras, in our briefing, we show that the times are a little bit different. But the owner of the vehicle said he got called around 2:30 in the morning and made statements at that time. So they knew who the owner was. So they didn't have to impound it to him.
But let me rephrase that. They didn't have an owner responding to the scene.
You know, Your Honor, I do not know the answer to that question. It was my understanding that he did come down to the scene, but I cannot say that. I certainly can go back in and provide that information to the court if they want us to show whether it was he did come down or he did not come down. I believe that that would be in the testimony of the individual during the preliminary hearing.
Ms. Meyer, I'm sorry.
just to finish what Judge Bolo was saying about the blood, you were identifying other blood that you think should have been recovered?
Sure. So let me, it's a real interesting case. You know, the state has cited to the sheriff versus Clark County versus Warner. And interestingly enough, I'm going to ask the court to look at a state from New Mexico in regards to the materiality of blood and the collection of blood or things with blood. And while the court did in the Sheriff County versus Warren, they did find that the approach from the New York, they did not accept the New Mexico approach. But if you look at the facts of the New York case, which are the facts in this case are a little bit different in regards to preservation and losing and collection. But in the state versus Ware, which is 118 New Mexico 319, it was cited in the sheriff's Clark County Warner 112 Nevada. The most important thing of this case is that when they looked at this situation, you had a domestic violence case. The perpetrator was the boyfriend of the girlfriend. The testimony at the time of the incident was that a rock was used to bludgeon the victim. So they arrested the man, but they only took a photograph of the rock with the blood on it. And when they went to the when they went to court and they went to grand jury and he was indicted, they said that they failed to preserve that rock or collect that rock. And the court found in New Mexico that that was a material issue. And because, of course, blood is going to either show a probability that it may change the outcome of this case. If one blood comes back and it's someone else's, then that's going to be the situation. Okay? And the interesting thing about the state versus Ware, which is different than this case, is that Ms. Meyer was adamant that she was not the driver. So the state knew, okay, that there was an issue in this case of saying, I am not the driver, I want to have all the evidence in my state. In the New Mexico case, it actually came out afterwards where the victim said, no, someone else was the one that bludgeoned me. And the court still found that the blood was material. In that case, just like in this case, blood is material. A DUI involving a car renders the vehicle material. As Justice Bolo said, the reason why we don't have the evidence is because they failed to collect it or preserve it when they had the opportunity of the vehicle. And so we're not talking about speculation here. We're talking about whether or not there's a probability that it will change the outcome. And the probability is that if there is multiple blood with different DNAs, that is a likely probability that it will change the outcome of this case.
So, counsel,
can I just ask my question? So this leads me to my question. Ms. Meyer never identified the driver of the vehicle, did she?
No, she did not. She does not know who the vehicle
is. Is that somewhat concerning?
But Ms. Meyer was in a state of alcohol. There's no question that her BAC was high. She doesn't know who that person was who started driving that vehicle. And so that's not really the issue here because the driver, they could have determined and adequately, instead of the shoddy investigation, determined that there are multiple blood stains instead of just saying we're going to take one. Or we're going to take the vehicle, we're going to let it go to the tow company, and then go from there. We have to remember that this case started in justice court, and it was dismissed. And then we waited 2 years to get an information.
Thank you. Thank you, Judge Westberg.
The definition of materiality requires there to be a showing that there is a reasonable probability that the results of the proceedings would have been different if the evidence had been available. In this case, since we're dealing with a pretrial writ of habeas corpus after a preliminary hearing, does that require you to show that the result of the preliminary hearing would have been different had this evidence been available?
Yes, and I think that the court also has the prerogative to determine whether or not a fair trial can or cannot be occurred in their courtroom for the dismissal of a case. So I think that Judge Walker can do one of each.
I mean, that's a very interesting point, because the habeas corpus is focusing on what happened at the preliminary hearing.
That's correct.
Versus the dismissal is focusing forward about what might happen at the trial and now can't happen because there's no evidence. I mean, the preliminary hearing, the state has such a slight, only the slight evidence has to be presented.
The standards are different, Your Honor, but still, even under those standards, when you look at Judge Walker's analysis of what it was, the materiality and the loss of the vehicle, of those two things that should have been considered by in the preliminary injunction, and as well as to figure out whether or not there could be a fair trial, along with the intent and the underlining aspects of the police department in regards to how they were treating Ms. Meyer and the investigation of, we don't care what you say, whatever bitch, you're guilty, we're going to get whatever we want, and then we're not going to get anything else, is enough for the judge to look at it and say, there's substantial evidence that this was a violation of the due process, and I ask the court not to infringe on Justice Walker's prerogatives. He is the trial judge, and we ask you to affirm his decision. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. O'Meara. We'll go back to the state for the rebuttal.
Your Honors, I think Judge Bola asked the question about, do we know which officer made this comment? The state filed an errata last week. There was an issue in the exhibit that was transmitted to this court. When I reviewed that, I viewed it on our internal evidence management software that was transmitted to defense. All the parties had an opportunity to review it in that same form. However, it came to my understanding that it was perhaps on the video that was transmitted to this court and it didn't have the extra information about who uploaded it. And so the record below, all the parties operated under the premise that it was Officer LaFrance that made it. However, I'm not sure exactly what Exhibit 1 shows. And so that metadata that was included with that video, I don't know if it's before this court.
Okay. So it's not clear for sure who said it.
That's correct, Your Honor. Okay. And again, I think that also goes to just the lack of a record that was made here on this particular issue. There wasn't sufficient findings to show bad faith. There wasn't sufficient findings. There wasn't sufficient evidence to show materiality. Mr. O'Meara talked about, we have blood in this case, and you need to collect blood because blood is material. Well, the state did collect blood in this case.
Just to finish on that other point, and I'll give you some extra time because this is a new issue. Is there anything that suggests that Officer Jones is the one that said it?
No, Your Honor. If in the absence of any information showing whose body camera captured that recording, there's no evidence whatsoever showing who made that statement.
Have you reviewed the video?
I have, Your Honor.
Okay, so we do have the video.
That's correct. It's Exhibit 1 from the district court. It was transmitted to this court.
And you're just clarifying that according to that exhibit, it's unclear who made the comment.
So I didn't have an opportunity to review the exhibit at district court before it was transmitted to this court. I reviewed it on the system that all of the attorneys use to review and share evidence at the county level, and that showed who uploaded that video. I don't know exactly what Exhibit 1 looked like when it was transmitted to this court, whether it included that supplemental information.
Okay, so you can have another minute, Mr. Naughton.
Thank you, Your Honor. Just to touch on the materiality in this case again, the district court very clearly stated multiple times throughout this hearing that it felt the evidence against Ms. Meyer was strong. It went out of its way to say, I think your client is factually guilty of this DUI. I don't think it's even a close call. I think the factual guilt is evident, is clear. I think this defendant drove it in the influence. The circumstantial evidence in this case is perhaps overwhelming, but certainly strong against this defendant. When we're examining the weight of the evidence, when we're trying to determine materiality, and again, we're set against the backdrop that this was a preliminary hearing that we're challenging, the overwhelming weight of the evidence, regardless of any uncollected blood, regardless of any unpursued mechanical investigation of this car, showed that Ms. Meyer was the driver of this. The subsequent forensic testing by the Washington County Crime Lab at the request of the officers on scene who collected that deployed driver's side airbag and the buckle swab for Ms. Meyer only confirmed that. The evidence is clear. We would ask that this court reverse Judge Walker's decision in this case and remand with further instructions to proceed anew.
Counsel, do you mind if
go ahead.
May I? Okay. I want to ask a similar question to the one that I asked the respondent, and that is if we were to remand for the district court to make findings, would the court need to find that there was a reasonable probability that the result of the preliminary hearing would have been different had the evidence been available in order to establish materiality?
I believe so, based upon the status of the proceedings below. This was all related to that pretrial writ of habeas corpus, which of course is challenging the probable cause determination by the justice court. The cases that follow Daniels are, they're all trial cases, and some of them involved a motion to dismiss during the trial or prior to the trial, and some of them were only raised on appeal afterwards. And so I think based upon the plain language of the materiality case law, we're talking about proceedings. The only proceeding that we had to conclusion in this case so far was a preliminary hearing.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Naughton. Mr. O'Meara? Okay. Good job by both counsel. Unfortunately, this case has been mentioned is already quite old, so we are do whatever we can to expedite our decision on it. But it's a very important issue, so we have to be very careful, too.